Good afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon for Friday, the 10th of February, the year 2017. I'm Jeff Brown, filling in for Andy Klein. Couldn't make it today. Today on the show, we'll be talking to Juno residents and newly minted filmmakers. Sydney Gaki and Kayla Royce will be here to talk about their new fly fishing film, Real Happiness, focuses on Southeast Alaska region. Penny Linden from the Nugget Mall will be here to highlight Sunday's Valentine's Day tea party. Britt Riley, animal control supervisor, will be here to talk about dog licensing requirements. That, all things...
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Army Corps of Engineers' decision to allow construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline to move forward is dividing lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington.
Some critics say President Donald Trump and his new administration seem to confront controversial decisions without worrying about who they anger. They've done it again by quickly approving the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, according to Democrats. Montana Senator John Tester used to be the top Democrat on the Indian Affairs Committee. He says he wishes the administration took a more thoughtful approach and listened to the tribe's concerns.
Well, I mean, I would tell you, I understand it goes through underneath a lake a mile wide. It seems to me they could have sited it in a place that does not provide as much potential for catastrophic spill. I mean, that river, I'm sure they could have found a spot narrower to go across than across the bottom of a lake.
Republicans see it differently. Wyoming Senator John Barrasso used to be the chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee. He says tribes' concerns are unfounded.
You know, the process of approving the pipeline has gone through lots of studies, lots of approval. It actually was approved at one point by the Obama administration, and then there was a reversal on that. You know, I think that all the due diligence has been done. I support the pipeline.
Barrasso says he also hopes the new administration allows even more pipelines to crisscross the West.
I support the pipelines. I think it's very important for us in North America to be focused on North American energy, energy security, the jobs that are related to that. And I think it's an important thing that we do. I support that pipeline. I supported Keystone XL pipeline.
But Senator Tester and other Democrats say they expect another outcry from the Sioux and other tribes out west if the administration doesn't consult them on the Dakota Pipeline and future projects on or near their lands.
I think that everybody wants to have their voices heard, and I think that this is no exception.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This week, a bipartisan group of more than a dozen U.S. senators signed a resolution which passed the Senate acknowledging the work of tribal colleges and universities. Rhonda Lavaldo spoke with some people at the tribal college in Lawrence, Kansas, and has this report.
With a resolution recognizing the important work of 37 tribal colleges across the United States, Haskell Indian Nations University student Cassandra Yepa spoke about why they matter.
I think just because there's not a lot of tribal colleges, and because of that, you know, like, how are they supposed to know that we're here or that we're trying to make a difference as well? Or a lot of Natives want to go to college, and sometimes this is our only option for colleges.
Haskell President Vanita Chenault appreciated the awareness brought to tribal colleges during the American Indian Higher Education Consortium Day on the Hill in Washington, D.C.
It is important for them to understand that the investment that is made in this university is a wise investment. We have a tremendous amount of support from our state delegation. You know, I think that they will go to bat for us in the appropriations process. Right now, I think it's also evident that we're very much in a stage of transition. They're still waiting on pieces of that transition to come together to determine funding impacts.
Tribal colleges serve more than 160,000 American Indian and Alaska Natives each year. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to listener-supported radio here on a June afternoon. Here in the studio with me now, the first guest, Sydney Agakagi and Kayla Roy, is talking about their new fishing film, Real Happiness. Thanks for coming in the station today.
Thanks for having us.
So, why did you call it Real Happiness?
Well, it's a film about fly fishing, and so we thought that it would be very punny to have the film named Real, R-E-E-L, Happiness.
And can you give me a basic idea what the plot is?
Well, the plot is basically Kayla starting off fishing in Juneau, which the fishing was a little slow for us as far as me filming the fishing at the beginning of last year, and then how it progressed into a lot more fish throughout the year.
Yeah.
What made you decide to do the film in the first place?
There was a grant that came out from Trout Unlimited about a year ago, and they wanted to do a film. They were looking for a film about women who fly fish. And so we started applying to the grant, and things just kept snowballing. We ended up getting sponsors, and a huge Kickstarter was completely funded. So we went off of that money, too, and it just developed into this project. We didn't get the grant, but we continued to go on with the film, which was fun because we didn't have as many guidelines by the end of the year.
Yeah.
What got you into fly fishing in the first place?
I grew up with fly fishing. My family fly fished growing up, and so I sort of grew up watching it and seeing it, and been working at the fly shop for the last few years, so it just sort of fit.
And what got you into video?
I have been taking photos almost my entire life, and there is a video option on my camera, and just one family trip in California on a road trip, I decided to take some footage, and I think that's when it started, and then it kind of went into wedding videos, and turned into this over the past couple of years.
So this isn't your first project?
I've done probably about 20 wedding videos at this point, and then a couple travel videos.
This is her first fly fishing film.
My first fly fishing film, though.
What's the biggest thing you've learned in your process here during the film?
You don't always catch fish on film.
Yeah, there's a lot of hanging out. We end up making a good time of just being together.
So. Yeah. There's a lot more to fishing than catching fish.
What's next?
Oh, we are looking forward to doing some more filming. It will definitely be around fly fishing still. It will be incorporated, but we're looking more into like environmental issues that are local and focusing on some of those.
Yeah, so another film in the works. Also, we might take this thing on some tours here and there. I haven't decided yet, so.
A couple of requests from people up north and down south.
Yeah.
What kind of tools did you use?
Oh, I have all sorts of cameras that I used, cinema cameras, just my regular DSLR. We ended up having some drone footage in there, which was pretty fun.
And then footage.
GoPro footage, yeah. And then just the basic gliders that I put my camera on. So the footage is a lot smoother than I think people are used to for more like homemade videos.
I'm talking to Sydney Gaki and Kayla Roys here about their new movie, Real Little Happiness. It's going to be shown tonight at the Hangar in the ballroom. And they're going to have some extra stuff there, too.
Yeah. We have a bunch of apparel. We have T-shirts and sweatshirts there that Sydney had designed all of. We also have the ladies of Fishy Wear, who sell sort of fish-related leggings and gear, are here in town from Anchorage to show off some of their gear. We also have a bunch of local artists that are going to be playing at the event, too.
But how much, you can't say feet of film anymore. How many hours of film did you film?
I would say there was at least, I'm going to say there's 20 hours of footage that I had to go through between drone footage and
GoPro footage,
interview footage, and the actual fishing footage. But it took at least a solid 10 months of gathering all of that.
And she narrowed it down to about 35 minutes.
Is it PG friendly?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Tell me the things you learned that you worked on another project.
Did I learn? We spent a lot of time figuring out how to get more of like the creative shots walking through the woods. So I don't know how many times I made Kayla turn around and do things again. So I can't say like the walking through the woods footage is necessarily completely like firsthand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's we did things over and over and over again.
Yeah, I learned how to get my photo taken real good.
Oh yeah, Kayla mastered the portrait.
How long did it take you to finish?
The editing process.
Well, to start from when you first got the camera out and
we
started shooting.
We started taking video, I think, February 2016 to make our trailer. And then in October was when we went to Yakutat, and that's when we ended the actual footage. And then from then on, it's been editing up until last night at 11 o'clock. Finally did the last edits.
Yeah.
What makes fly fishing so magical to you? And what's the best way to put that across in video?
I guess, so there's so many slow motion, like, videos in this film that are so fun just to watch. I mean, the casting's really romantic in slow motion, especially the aerial views of it, the releasing of the fish. There's some amazing shots of Kayla releasing the fish, and some awesome shots of her nails while doing that. So, yeah, it's just getting to see the fish is beautiful, and it's so short, but getting to watch it on film in slow motion, you really get to embrace it.
And start today, tonight, at the Hangar by the Ballroom.
Yes.
Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be see you all dancing there. Later. So.
Yeah, we have, so Annie Bartholomew is going to start off the night. We also have Taylor Vidic playing, and then to close out the night, we have DJ Quells, who will be on from 10 to 12. So even if you can't make it to the film, you are more than welcome to come hang out and dance with us until then.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for coming by the station.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
2, 3, 4. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. The Kenai River flows just 2 hours from my door. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. Fly in the sky, the fish weren't biting, and I wondered why. He swooped down and grabbed himself a fish. I wondered if that's his favorite dish. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. I'm going fishing and I'm flying. The Kenai River flows just 2 hours from my door. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. I caught a rainbow and I let him go. Tried to catch his mother, but I was too slow. I fell in the river and I caught myself a shiver. Picked up my pole and I headed home. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low. I'm going fishing and I'm flying low.
Texas, and I'm flying low. I'm going fishing, and I'm flying low. I'm going fishing, and I'm flying low.
It's about 15 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into Junior Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio are Kelly Rindom, who's the mall manager at the mall. Penny Peterson, who's... Penny Peterson.
I have Vintage Fair in the Nugget Mall.
And we'll give that's awesome. Wendy Hazer.
Wendy Hafer with Sportsman's Warehouse.
All right, thank you for coming down. We're going to talk about the Tea Party, which is coming up this next Sunday.
Yes, Sunday the 12th, which is 2 days away.
Can you tell us about Vintage Fair in the first place?
And we're having a little tea party. Well, it's a big tea party. And we'll have the fancy dishes and fancy food, finger foods. And it's fun of all ages for little girls or moms and grandmas or actually even husbands and wives.
What makes a tea party besides the tea?
I think the little finger foods, the scones and the lemon curd and the strawberries dipped in lavender cream. It's just a little fancy filling food.
What time does it start?
It starts, we have a seating at 1 and a seating at 2:30. The tickets will be on sale until tomorrow, then so that we can prep food for the Sunday.
How much does it cost to get in?
It's $25 for the adult and $18 for the child.
Tell me about Vintage Fair. What kind of things do you serve?
We serve a lot of quiche, sandwiches, soup, scones. We make everything fresh, homemade and fresh.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been in business there for, this is my 14th year.
What's the favorite item on the menu?
I would say the quiche.
Kelly, you're manager of the mall. What's happening at the mall these days?
We have quite a few things coming up for the mall. Well, we have the tea party that Penny just talked about. We have tomorrow the Boy Scouts is having their Pinewood Derby at the mall. That's in the old Hallmark building. We have an arts and crafts fair this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. On February the 25th, I'm doing a Mardi Gras and a Mardi Paul event. There will be more details on Facebook a little bit closer to time, but it's going to be a day-long event. The Juno Douglas Theater Department is going to have a makeup, dress-up, photo booth, as well as a face painting booth that will benefit the Juno Douglas Theater Department. There's also going to be a booth to make shoebox floats to enter into the shoebox float contest. For the Mardi Paul's parade, people should dress up their dogs in little Mardi Gras outfits, T-shirts, Mardi Gras-themed beads. Enter them. I'll have some entry forms at the mall office, and then I'll put them on Facebook as well. It's just going to be a day of fun. Easter's coming soon after that. We're going to have pictures with the bunny. We're going to have a mall-wide Easter egg hunt. Have prizes, all kinds of things like that. Right now we have Valentine's Day bouquet balloons for sale. Still have the community room. We have a lot of things going on for that. Anyone needs to reserve it for meetings, practices, events. If people don't follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, they should. I keep it updated with all the events, and there's always events going on. The mall is a very busy place these days. So one thing I would like to bring to attention is I would like for any of the school organizations that are needing to do fundraising to reach out to me. I would love to provide a venue for them to do fundraising. So if they would like to set up booths or tables to do face painting, hair braiding, games, showcase art, any kind of athletics, any ideas they have to do fundraising, I would love to provide a venue for them to be able to do that. So they just need to contact the mall office and get with me to set that up.
And Wendy, you're from the Sportsman's Warehouse.
Yes. There is a lot going on over at Sportsman's here in the next 6 weeks or so. Right now, we do have, this weekend only, we have a black tag sale going on in clothing and footwear. It's 50% off and an additional 30% off of anything in clothing ending in 9/7. We have our military and public safety appreciation sale going on February 18th. And then March 2nd, we have a ladies' night. We have a lot of manufacturers, Vortex, Leopold, Night Force, a lot of games and classes and everything for the ladies. It's just for the ladies. We'll have specials in all of the departments for them to shop in and learn. And that's going to be a really exciting night. And then on the 5th of March, we do a balloon pop. And what that is we have over 300 balloons that have little tickets inside from anywhere from 5% to 100% off of your purchase that day. So those are a couple of the big sales going on. And just like Kelly said, if you don't follow us on Facebook, strongly, strongly suggest get on Facebook and follow. These guys have done such a good job in the mall. There is a ton of stuff going on, and you can find all that stuff on the Nugget Mall Facebook page, on the Sportsman's Warehouse Facebook page. And it's an exciting time right now as Juno wakes up, you know, from our little slumber of sorts and get out and about. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now.
What's the most popular item?
What's the most popular item? That's a good question. I would say ammunition and firearms, quite honestly. A lot of firearms are being sold, and we are well stocked with all of that stuff too. So we can do anything from camping to hiking, shopping.
What are the hours of the mall?
Monday through Friday, 10 to 8. Saturday the same. On Sunday, 10 to 5. I'm sorry, 12 to 5.
All right. I'm talking to Penny, Wendy, and Kelly from the Nugget Mall Sportsman's Warehouse and Vintage Fair. Once again, give us the facts about the tea party, please.
It's happening Sunday. We get your tickets now at Vintage Fair and until tomorrow. That will be the cutoff date, or so that we can prep our food. And we encourage you to dress your best and come and have tea and sit with your favorite companion.
Well, thanks for coming down the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Nope, just stop by the Nugget Mall and see what's going on.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 10th of February, 2017. It's the birthday of Bertolt Brecht, born in Augsburg, Bavaria, 1898. When he was just 30 years old, he had his first big success, the Three-Penny Opera, which he wrote with composer Kurt Weill. When Hitler rose to power, Brecht sought asylum in Scandinavia, and then eventually settled in Santa Monica, where he wrote more than 50 screenplays in 6 years, only one of which was produced, Hangman Also Die, in 1943. Made his way to East Germany in 1949, went on to run the Berliner Ensemble. Bertolt Brecht, who said, "Art is not a mirror held up to reality, but a hammer with which to shape it." It's the birthday of Boris Pasternak, born Moscow, 1890. Started out as a poet, wrote two collections of poetry, and in the early 30s began work on his masterpiece, Dr. Zhivago, following the lives of more than 60 characters through the first half of 20th century Russia. Pasternak wrote, "I always dreamt of a novel in which, as in an explosion, I would erupt with all the wonderful things I saw and understood in this world." It was finished in 1955. And it was on this date in 1846, members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, left Illinois for the West. They had started out in New York, where Joseph Smith said he'd been visited by the angel Moroni, 1823. He had discovered the gold plates, translated them, wrote the Book of Mormon. Smith and his followers moved to Kirtland, Ohio, 1831, later Jackson County, Missouri. They were expelled There they came to Commerce, Illinois, where they founded the town of Nauvoo. But their neighbors distrusted their theology, their views on polygamy. Joseph Smith tried to make Nauvoo an independent territory. He declared martial law, named himself king of a theocracy. The governor ordered his arrest, and before he could go to trial, a mob broke into the jail and shot him to death in 1844. So the church's new leader, Brigham Young, decided that they must move west. He appointed 25 men to lead about 100 families on the journey westward across Iowa to Nebraska, where in the autumn of 1846, some 12,000 Mormons were making their temporary home over the winter. There was a vanguard party that broke a trail through the Rockies and reached the Salt Lake Valley that July. And Brigham Young came 3 days later and said, "This is the right place." Here's a poem for today by David Shoemate, Reading to the Blind Man. We start with the classics, Homer, Shakespeare, Chaucer. But he becomes bored and wants to read romances, stories of people adrift on the tides of their passion. He is afraid he's missing more than sight, that there are continents of emotions he has never explored. As I read, his lips move as if he now can see the words, as if he were one of those lovers about to collide, as if it were his hands on her breasts, his body atop hers. He whispers for me to slow down. It has taken him this long to get here. He would like to linger now for a while. A poem by David Shoemate, Reading to the Blind Man, from High Water Mark, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 28 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into it, Junior Afternoon. Our next guest is coming to us by the magic of the telephone, Lori Craig. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you for letting me be on this afternoon.
So you've got some good news and bad news coming up.
We do. We were so looking forward to having Heather Lendy be with us tonight for a fireside lecture, but the snow got in the way, and the planes are not flying between Haines and Juneau. So we've made a real rapid switch over, and instead of having delightful Heather Lendy tonight to talk about her books, we are going to have me talking about the Klondike Gold Rush.
What kind of things are you going to be talking about the Gold Rush about?
Well, I think the history of the Gold Rush is a really fascinating story, and Juneau had some effect. We certainly were influenced by what happened. As a matter of fact, there were a number of buildings that suddenly sprouted second stories to look more substantial for the people who were coming through. But certainly in southeast Alaska, the Gold Rush made a huge difference for a number of different things. So I'm primarily going to tell just the basic story of this fever that struck the world, and it did strike the world when it happened in the late 1890s.
Well, it's a pretty fascinating slice of Alaska's history. What is it about the Klondike that's important to Alaskans?
Well, I think probably the context is a really important thing because, you know, Juneau had its own gold strike in 1880, and we were a well-going concern, almost a 20-year-old community by the time the Klondike event happened, which discovery was on the 17th of August of 1896. There were already people up in the North Country, and they drifted into what was to become Dawson City and spent that first winter digging in the muck and pulling out nuggets. And then when those ships came down to San Francisco and Seattle in the middle of 1897, that's when it touched off the wild craze of people thinking that you could just go put a shovel in the dirt and come up with gold nuggets. 30,000 people made that journey up to the Northland. And, of course, they came right through Southeast Alaska primarily on steamers and any kind of a boat that would float. Things that had been considered for demolition were patched up and put into service to take people who were just demanding to come to Skagway on Dyea and start the long, torturous climb up the steep passes to get to Lake Bennett and then drift on into Dawson City. Of course, by the time the bulk of the people got there, they found that most of the claims had been staked, although there are some fascinating stories about the benches proving to be have some amazing properties. But I'll just kind of do an overview and just touch on some of the couple of the stories.
Sounds fun. It starts at 6:30 and goes for about an hour.
That's right. It goes for about an hour, and then we have a second one at 8 o'clock. And I will apologize to people because this is not Heather Lendy, but for those folks who still want to come out to the glacier, you're welcome to have at least a presentation, but I will certainly understand if people decide to wait and skip until next week when Jim Baichtal will be talking about the ancient sea levels that we have here in Southeast Alaska.
I'm sure tonight's show will be pretty exciting just in general.
I hope so. You know, it is a part of our history, and it's something that, you know, every time we get on the ferry, we go on the same route as the Stampeders did, and I often think about them as we glide along on the ferry up to Haines or Skagway, and I think about, well, people were talking about this fantastic place that we're going to go. They were trying to meet up with partners that they could trust with all their gear and people that had skills that would match their own so that they could rely on each other. It was very much an event that needed a partner or maybe a few partners. And there were many people who really did some amazing work. The things that they were carrying on their back is an amazing story. We tend to think that the women who went to the Klondike were just dance hall girls, and it's very far from that. There were a number of people that were a number of women who worked really, really hard. They baked, they did laundry, they invested in claims, and they worked just as hard as the men did.
So besides the Klondike, what else are you going to be talking about tonight?
Well, that's primarily it. It's the journey up and what it took to do this, because, you know, first of all, you had to figure out what were you supposed to take. And fortunately, the Mounties decided that after that first winter, where there was almost starvation in a place because there was no food, there was no town, so to speak, it was just a bunch of tents, they insisted that everybody had a ton of supplies, and they gave them the list of what to buy. And my first picture is that fantastic, iconic picture of people climbing up what they call the Golden Staircase of the Chilkoot Pass. They had to do that 40 times to carry their flour and their soap and their bacon and coffee and their stove and their pyxes and shovels and their two pairs of rubber boots and their dried vegetables. All that stuff had to go in there because there was no store to buy anything.
But I've been wondering, what happens with the gear when they get up there? They had to make several trips. So was there someone to watch it?
Well, that's why you got a partner. Somebody watches while somebody slides all the way down and packs up the next load. And it was, you know, body to body. And if you stepped out of line, you would have a real hard time getting back in again. And then you're coping with the snow at the top that might bury your whole pile of goods. The Mounties were watching things on the top, and they were very good at enforcing the law. It was quite different than the wild story down in Skagway in the U.S. side that was a little more rowdy.
So tell me what's going on at the glacier these days.
What's going on at the glacier? Well, we have some very exciting things. We have the work is going on our elevator replacement. So there's an occasional pounding now and then, which we think is a wonderful sound. And we've also started doing some wonderful programs for school children. We started that this week, and we have rangers that are dedicated to doing classroom work. So we have provided transportation for classes out here to the glacier for programs for kids of many different ages. We have some first graders and some fourth graders, and we want them to be able to use their glacier as a classroom to learn about the things that we teach people about year-round. But they're geared towards students, and we're really excited because it's been very well-received, and it's just great to hear all the sounds of the little feet and the cheerful sounds of their voices, too. It's really fun to have life back in the visitor center.
6:30 and 8 o'clock tonight at the Menlo Glacier Visitor Center. Lori Craig, thank you so much for talking.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care. Bye-bye. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
soul. Hit the planet up with music, that's beautiful. Roots caviar business as usual. This collaboration is the next movement, y'all. Roots crew regiment, black thought me amo. And it's thing for life, yo, and that's final. Kids, you know the title, ain't no reason to remind you how I talk hustle from New York to Brussels. First to hit you in the head and then in all your muscles. Think deep, we call it Rafiki. And to reach the definition of a true MC, I'm subsurface, it's hard for y'all to see. Rafiki, Rafiki,
before the hour, and you're tuned into June Afternoon. Jeff Brown, I'm your host for today. In the studio next, we have Brett Riley, the Animals Control Supervisor. Brett, thank you for coming down the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So what's your job?
My job of an animal control officer is to respond to any calls that the public may request for service, whether it's a barking complaint to an animal and cruelty report. We respond to all sorts of calls.
How many calls do you get a day?
Well, that kind of depends on the season. Generally, the call volume is a lot higher in the summer. We've got about 100 cases this last month here, but the calls are about 800 to 1,000 a month.
Did you go to animal control school?
I did. I went to it's called NACA Academy. It's a training program for just to be an animal control officer. Yeah.
What kind of things did you have to learn?
Criminal investigations was a big part of it for animal cruelty and neglect cases, animal breeds, capturing techniques, amongst many other things.
How long is the school?
It's a 40-hour course for one segment. There's other modules that you can sign up to go to. The initial one is 40 hours.
How many dogs are there, do you know?
Well, we have about 4,000 dogs that are licensed on average right now. We know there are many more dogs in Juneau. About half of them that come in through us are not licensed, so I suspect there's around 8,000 to 10,000.
How come they don't have licenses for cats?
License for cats is currently we don't have an ordinance that prevents cats from running at large, so licensing associated with that may be difficult.
So you wouldn't see a snake license?
A snake license, yeah.
Why is getting a license important?
Getting a license is important because that's the identification for your dog. So at any point in a dog's life, it'll escape or go wandering at least once. No fault of the owner in some cases, but when a dog is found and it doesn't have a collar or any sort of ID, then we have to bring it to the animal shelter until we can determine who the owner is. Sometimes that's very time consuming. Facebook is a really good tool that we use. The community is really good with helping us locate owners of lost animals.
What kind of tools do you use?
Well, tools just in the field, like in our truck, we have tools like catch poles for getting dangerous dogs. We have a tool that we use for identifying dogs is a microchip scanner. So if a dog or a cat or any animal is microchipped, then we can use that and get a unique number from that and look it up in our system and find the owner.
What does the dog license cost?
Dog license is $20 for an altered dog, meaning either a spayed or neutered dog. It's $45 for an unfixed animal.
Do you have fun doing your job? Most animal control officers don't have the greatest reputation because people, you're taking their dog away. And sometimes there's repeat offenders. And
absolutely. The perception is pretty negative in most cases for an animal control officer. You see a Disney movie or something like that, and you see the dog catcher running around with a net trying to scoop up the dog, and that's kind of what we get trying to get away from. I do enjoy my job. I like working with the animals. I like associating with animal owners. And in a lot of cases, animal owners aren't very happy to see me or my other officers. But we're trying to collectively build a good relationship with all animal owners in Juneau.
Are there any breeds that you know are going to be trouble, or are most dogs pretty nice?
You know, it really depends on the way that they're raised. As far as breed goes, there's also bad perceptions for breeds. You know, pit bulls get a bad rap, but they can be very loving dogs. You know, it just really depends on how they're brought up.
Tell me more about animal control.
We get a lot of calls. I mean, we've got a pretty big responsibility here in Juneau enforcing the animal ordinances. We have three full-time uniformed officers here, and we're on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We get called from the police department, sometimes the fire department, depending on what the case is. Unfortunately, we do run into a lot of cases where, you know, dogs or other animals are hit by cars. You know, we respond to those calls. We recently had a small dog, you know, who was adopted from the Gastineau Humane Society, which is where we work, and was killed on Sandy Beach, and that investigation is still ongoing. And we do, you know, these cases are very time-consuming when it comes to reports where we don't have a lot of information, and we do respond to a number of animal bites as well, and that's, you know, that's pretty much it. Barking complaints are a big one. You know, every neighborhood has a barking dog where, you know, eventually you just get fed up with it and you call animal control and you're really mad and you want something to be done right away, and we understand the frustration because we also have dogs that bark in our neighborhoods. So, you know, we do try and handle those situations quickly and try and resolve them before anybody gets really mad.
Are you a dog owner yourself?
I am not currently a dog owner. I just had a baby. So dog's not in the books right now. I've got four kids living at home, and my hands are full.
All right, Britt Riley, thank you so much for coming down and talking. If people want to get their dog licensed, how can they do that?
Okay, you can stop by at the Gastineau Humane Society. You can just drop in. We try to make it as easy as possible. You can give us a call at 789-6997. You can also visit our website at ghspets.org. And we also have a Facebook page, the Gastineau Humane Society. If you just search it on Facebook, you can find all the information there.
How much does a dog license cost?
Oh, yeah, the dog license is $20 for an altered dog, meaning it's spayed or neutered, and $45 if the dog is not spayed or neutered.
Right, thanks for your...
All right, thanks for having me.
Have you seen our dog?
Have you seen all the
This is Bird Note. Northern saw-whet owls reveal we have much to learn about the world of birds. In fall, they migrate south from Canada and the northern states to find food and shelter. In spring, they head north again, traveling silently, in part to avoid being eaten by larger owls. Author and ornithologist Scott Widensall shares his fascination with these tiny creatures.
First of all, let's just get it out on the table. Saw-whet owls are cute. They're just a really engaging, appealing animal. But here's a species that up until the early to mid-1990s was considered to be rare in most of its range. My home state of Pennsylvania had it listed as a species of special concern. It's on our conservation license plates because everybody thought that this was a rare species. It turns out this is one of the most common forest raptors in North America. But they're nocturnal. Their entire migration takes place after dark. They're secretive during the day. They're easy to overlook. The advertisement call of a male saw-whet owl, if you play that at night during the migration, it will lure the migrating owls down out of the sky, and we string mist nets in the woods and harmlessly catch them, band them, take a few measurements, let them go. The numbers are amazing. Last year in Pennsylvania, we caught almost 4,000 saw-whet owls, and this is a bird that everyone thought was rare. I love saw-whet owls as an object lesson in how little we know about even the most common species of birds.
We have videos of these elusive owls. Check them out at birdnote.org.
When 17-year-old Nick takes a float plane to his grandparents' village, it signals change for his grandfather, cousin, father, and his grandmother, Linda, the strong warp in this family whose experiences are woven together with modern and traditional storytelling, including song, dance, poetry, and 90s hip-hop. A world premiere portrait of an Alaskan family by Thlinget playwright Frank Henry Koshkatas. They Don't Talk Back runs January 25th through February 19th at Perseverance Theater. Tickets at the Jack Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
What is civility? Does it matter? Are Alaskans more civil? The University of Alaska Southeast MPA program hosts a discussion of civility in the last frontier with Alaskan leaders Mayor Mike Navarre, journalist Dermot Cole, and Senators Anna McKinnon and Berta Gardner. Join the discussion in person at 360 on February 23rd at 5:30 p.m. or join the discussion online at 360north.org.
This is Larry Irene Spangler from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. I'm here to encourage you to take part in Juno's community-wide 17YOK initiative by doing one kind act each day and once a week directing a kind act towards someone outside your normal circle. You can get more information on the Year of Kindness by visiting the Juno Police Department's Facebook page. Together, we can make Juno a better place to live.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Chanson passant.
trouver la dernière fois. C'est là, je suis, c'est là, je suis, c'est là, je suis, c'est là, je suis,
for the hour, and you are tuned into June afternoon. There's a winter weather advisory. Snow showers before 3 a.m. in the evening, then rain and snow showers, low temperatures around 30 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, rain possibly heavy at times. Forecast for Saturday night, rain before 3 in the morning, then showers after 3 a.m. Rain could be heavy at times, low temperatures around 35 degrees.
There's something new in the air. It's a little soul, it's a little jazz, and it's a little bit more. And hey, this is Nod here, and I'm here every Friday night from 9 to 11. Won't you join me for Far True Radio, and I promise you, you'll be glad you did. Friday nights at 9 p.m., KRNN-FM.
Here's a recipe for great radio. Take some folk, add a little swing, mix in a dash of country. Tune your radio to 102.7 Saturday afternoons from 3 to 5 with me, C. Scott Fry. You're guaranteed a tasty blend of tunes that'll keep your toes tapping and your knees slapping. Prize the limit Saturday afternoons from 3 to 5 on listener-supported radio, KRNN-FM. Thank you.